Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is the score. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. Always live on the free Odyssey app.
The Score! This hour is brought to you by Accelerated Tax Resolution.
Bernstein and Holmes. Middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
I think it's important that, you know, as you think about the decision to hold both guys, it really was, you know, simply, you know, their value to the Cubs as players, as people, you know, that value far exceeded what we were being offered. And it's really, really that simple.
Okay. I'm not sure how that gets you closer to winning a World Series, but so be it. Here to help us figure all of this out is Patrick Mooney of The Athletic. He's on Twitter at PJ_Mooney. He joins the Bernstein and Holmes Show on The Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Hello, Patrick. What's happening?
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for joining us. What is it that makes sense about them not trading Wilson Contreras, and what doesn't make sense about them not trading Wilson Contreras for you?
Well, there's a lot to unpack there, as to use a phrase that Ian Happ did the other day on your show. I'd say that in the abstract, sure, you know, it makes sense that, you know, whatever IV projection models the Cubs have up there in the offices, you know, said that the comp pick they would get is worth more than whatever was on the table from the multiple teams that inquired on Wilson Contreras. But, you know, to me, this goes back to, you know, last year and the deals they did and what they signaled to the entire baseball world, that no one is untouchable and they were willing to make moves like this. And part of the value is, you know, they love talking about how great their player development system is. And they had, you know, an off-season program that was actually very innovative of bringing in, you know, a large group of their best prospects who weren't on the 40-man roster and, you know, housed them in Arizona and set up, you know, an entire training program that really was kind of unprecedented when you talk to other people in the baseball industry. And now it's like, okay, you're going to wait until basically next August to onboard that prospect. I think there's really no, the Cubs have kind of put themselves in this corner to where I don't think there's any realistic thought like, oh, okay, now we're going to pivot and sign Wilson long term. I mean, that could happen in theory, but I don't think that was like the plan going in. You know what I mean?
I'm just trying to figure out what we overrated here. Is this sort of just a hometown thing that we're excited that, I mean, it's Wilson Contreras and he's had this incredible year and he was, you know, he won a World Series. Did the baseball world really not create a market for him? Jed said this morning, the catching market is different. Everybody always needs starting pitching. Everybody needs relief pitching. Not everybody needs a catcher or maybe this catcher. Or did we overrate Jed's ability to get something for him, or both?
Yeah, I'd say kind of all of the above here. I think this is a early indicator maybe of what Wilson Contreras' market could be like as a free agent. That, you know, I think, you know, looking at some of the top catching deals ever, I'm not sure if he's going to approach that. I think there are legitimate concerns in general about onboarding a catcher in the middle of the season. I mean, that's why the Cubs, if you go back to 2016 in spring training, you know, they wanted him working with some of those veteran pitchers who they thought he could help. And, you know, I also feel too, like, is Wilson Contreras like the number one defensive catcher in the game? No. Are some of those concerns overrated? I think so. I mean, when you look at the entire body of work, Wilson's been a three-time all-star catcher, and you have to like give and take with every aspect of a player, and that what Wilson brings to the table is really unique and extremely difficult to find and will be really hard for the Cubs to replace if that's kind of the way they go here heading into next season. And it certainly looks like they like Yan Gomes, P.J. Higgins, assuming Miguel Amaya gets healthy. I think that's where they're very strongly leaning in terms of kind of a catching combination rather than giving Wilson that one huge deal. And maybe that qualifying offer changes the calculus a little bit, but they certainly seem to be hoping for that draft pick rather than bringing him back.
Patrick, where do you think the Cubs are on their time horizon for their next great Cubs team? Because I've talked with a lot of Cubs fans this past week that think, oh, well, they'll be up and running in 2024. And then I heard Jed today, and that didn't feel like it was the case. But you're closer to it. What do you see as being realistic?
Well, there is no timeline, right? I mean, they refuse to say that. They don't even want to call it a rebuild. But, you know, I think there are certainly some pieces in place. I mean, I think, you know, sometimes you can either get too close to it or sometimes you can look, you know, too far into the future. But, I mean, Nico Hoerner is a legitimate major league shortstop, you know, a very nice player, a really good influence in the clubhouse. I think you see Christopher Morel, his energy. I think he's shown a lot on the pitching side. You know, they have gotten better. I mean, the confidence to deal of Scott Efros, you know, signals that I do think they have something figured out. It's not like the biggest thing that you need to figure out to become a World Series contender, but they have made gains in that area. And, you know, even people who question some of the Cubs' methods or some of the shifts that they've made over the years, you know, agree that there's a ton of like high-end blue chip talent in the farm system. You know, that's not going to help them in their doubleheader today at St. Louis, but there is a wave forming, and then it's up to Jed to one, you know, convert some of those guys into major league players, and that could be via trade. And then also, I mean, you look at their books going forward. I mean, even if they're conservative this off season, there's a ton of money and a ton of talent that should be brought to Chicago. So there are ways to accelerate here, and you know, they just have to be right.
That's why I try to look at the big picture of how Jed defines what he has at his disposal. Do you know how often they meet to talk about budgeting and how fluid those conversations are? Because I get back to the famous Crane Kenny statement about the wheelbarrow full of money that was supposed to be thrown off by the Marquee Network. This idea, every day that I drive by that DraftKings brick and mortar sports book right there that is on the outside of the building that Hickory Street partners as revenue that doesn't necessarily have to be shared around baseball, that how often do they reassess Jed's budget? Is it yearly that they just give him a number? They say no tax this year. Is it at the deadline? Or does Jed ever get to go to them and say, hey, do I have permission to do this and this because this will get us closer to winning a World Series? Or do they care about that?
Yeah, I think once again, it's all of the above, and that's why it makes figuring out what the Cubs are trying to do a little more confusing, because they say the money will be there, but historically how this works is, you know, you go to the end of the season, you have a kind of a baseline idea of season ticket renewals, how good or bad the team might perform. You can look at the general economic climate. You get your end of season returns of seeing, you know, kind of how well you did off the field. So that's part of it. You know, that is still something that traditionally they work through kind of September, October on. And then, you know, there is this wiggle room that CEO had over the years. And, you know, I distinctly remember seeing him at the GM meetings after that surprising 2015 NLCS run, and his mood was not someone who was going to do big things that, you know, they were looking at it. It was, well, once we get our TV deal, then we could do two, you know, nine-figure contracts in one offseason. Then they collaborated with the business side, and they were able to expand things and do much bigger things than they imagined. And part of that was that NLCS run and the money that came in and kind of pounding the table for this is what we should do. You've seen at the trade deadline, Chairman Tom Ricketts authorize adding someone like Nick Castellanos. We saw in the pandemic year when they non-tendered Schwarber but signed Jock Peterson, like they moved to a higher range of their payroll projections. So, like, it's a long way of saying it's up in the air, and I think that's kind of why Cubs fans are frustrated, because there hasn't been, you know, kind of that clear vision in certain cases. But, like, even if they don't go all out this offseason, there's no reason not to add, you know, multiple proven big league pieces to, I think, help buy you some time, to help let the prospects grow a little bit, to help some of those off-the-field ancillary businesses that you have. And to me, I think, you know, if you add a big-time starting pitcher or two, that could do a lot just to give you some baseline credibility and give you a guy that you're going into a series, you know, that he's going to give you a great chance to win and to stop some of those losing streaks and let some of these younger pitchers develop and give your position players kind of a better rhythm day to day. I think that's where I would think it's heading this offseason.
Patrick, how would you describe Jed Hoyer as president of the Cubs, like his style?
I would say it's still kind of being defined. I would say that he is certainly experienced. He appears to be less emotional than Theo. I think there has been an emphasis on and investments in R&D, technology, a willingness to obviously, you know, trade Rizzo, Javi, KB, and then clearly holding the line on Wilson. And so there's been a lot of turnover in that front office. I think, you know, he inherited, you know, what is not, was far from an ideal situation in a lot of ways. And, you know, going forward, he's definitely put his stamp on this. I mean, whatever happens going forward, like, he's steered it, you know, those circumstances were kind of what he walked into, but no, he's steered it and done it his way now. And, you know, for as bad as the major league team has been for the last two seasons, he really has a great opportunity in front of him. I mean, they always talk about Theo and Jed, you know, what are the two most valuable currencies in the game? It's financial flexibility and young talent. And the Cubs should have that in spades for years. And that ultimately it's how do you cash in on those opportunities and convert that the payroll space that they've, you know, kind of slashed their way to, and these young prospects that are, you know, kind of being hyped throughout the minors, like, you know, what do they become? And, you know, I'd say that is, you know, a great opportunity for him. You know, it's his time to put his mark on what he calls this next great Cubs team.
Before we let you go, I'm sure you are getting the notice, as we are, that the Cubs and the Cardinals will be playing in London June 24th and 25th next season. So I imagine you're going to get your ticket booked, maybe build some time around that for a little busman's holiday, perhaps?
Yeah, I guess Sahadev and I will have to do our draft for, you know, when we do the road trips for next year. I'm pretty sure he had claimed that one in 2020, the one that got canceled. So I'm not sure if he retroactively still has like right of first refusal on that or not. But thank you for the reminder, Dan. I'll have to hop on that.
I think Sahadev is already like the contingency of, yeah, of Sharma's have been like, no, we're going to London. Like we don't have to do a rock, paper, scissors, Spock to figure this whole thing out. Patrick, thanks for joining us, man. We appreciate it.
All right. Take care, guys.
That's Patrick Mooney of The Athletic. We've been talking a lot about what Jed Hoyer said this morning with the Mully and Haw show when they asked him direct questions about all this stuff, about the direction of the organization, what talks they had, what talks they didn't have, how they communicated with their players, trying to make sense of some of this. We have boiled down that interview to what we think are the most important parts, and you'll hear it.
Yeah, let's do a little bit of active listening, too, because when we jumped on during transition, people were like, what did Jed say? What did Jed say? We're going to give you an opportunity to hear it. We want you to react via text or via the Twitch stream and let us know what you think.
And I also want to mention Brittany Griner was indeed sentenced to 9 years in a Russian prison. And already the president's office has said that they've decried the sentencing. They're going to do everything in their power to bring her home. They have called this unjust. So this is already at the highest governmental levels. And the smart people who are talking about it are guessing that something will be worked out, that the prospect of her actually serving 9 years in a Russian prison is highly, highly unlikely one way or another. Either way, not great overall, but that is the latest there. But we'll hear from Jed Hoyer next on The Score.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
Jed Hoyer is the president of baseball operations for the Chicago Cubs, and he was on The Score this morning on Mully and Haw. The deadline has passed, and he was trying to explain why they ended up not doing much.
We value Wilson a lot, you know, given his contribution to the team and, you know, what we know he brings every day. I do think that market is a tight market. You know, the relationship between a pitching staff and a catcher during the course of a year, it builds. And I think a lot of times teams are reluctant to, you know, sort of change catching mid-season because of the challenges of learning a new pitching staff in the middle of the year and things like that. So it was a tight market. I mean, you know, candidly, we had a feeling it could be. We conveyed that, you know, to Wilson and to his representatives that, you know, this is no sure thing. You know, I think clearly, based on the media coverage, there was an assumption that this was definitely going to happen. But I think we knew that there was a, you know, handful of teams that might consider such a transaction, but that we ultimately knew that it's not like having a starting pitcher or having a relief pitcher where, you know, everyone can use a really good starting pitcher and everyone can use a really good reliever. I think people view the catching market differently, and that's kind of how it played out.
I'm just curious. You talked about the emotional toll. When the trade deadline ends, do you call Wilson? Who calls Wilson? Do you call Ian Happ? Do you have a conversation with them? You talked about that emotional toll. Did you experience it in conversations with either guy?
For sure. You know, it was kind of awkward because the deadline was ending as like the game prep was beginning for the game. So that those conversations had to wait till later. We couldn't do it right before the game. But yeah, we've had those conversations, and I really do empathize with both Ian and with Wilson and what they went through in terms of, you know, cameras in their face all the time and people focused on their departure. And, you know, that's not easy. I think that's not easy from a human standpoint to think that, you know, any moment you can get a call and have a new employer, have to pack your bags, have to move to a new city, have to meet new people, have to perform in front of a new fan base. Like that's really difficult. And I think a lot of times when we talk about these things, I do think that people kind of do lose sight of that aspect of it. And we just wanted to make sure we conveyed to both those guys that we understood that. Now, you know, we had also communicated to both guys prior to the deadline that, you know, this isn't a sure thing. And you know, we value you a lot. You know, certainly, we're not going to give you away for a below average offer. And they knew that. But I do think, you know, it's the snowball you know, kind of got going down the hill, and I think some of the coverage of the trade market made it seem as though, like I said, it was a fait accompli that we were going to trade those guys. So I do think that contributed probably emotionally, but yes, do I understand how difficult that must be as a player? Absolutely. It's really difficult. And I think that, you know, having traded a lot of players, I understand, like, you know, the family component that goes into that, the emotional highs and lows that come with that phone call. And the best I can do is tell them that while I've never experienced being traded myself, I do understand how difficult that can be.
So, Jed, to me, the big picture question is obvious now, is because you both guys are still Cubs. You have them here for the next 60 games or so and into the offseason. Are contract extensions possible with both or either guy? And if that's the case and they're still here, how does it affect or alter the big picture plan for the rebuild?
Well, I guess, of course, that's possible. I mean, nothing's changed as far as the fact that we're not going to talk about that stuff publicly. If we're going to sit down with our agents and talk, we aren't going to bring that up. And hopefully this doesn't become 60 days of asking, you know, what the status of those things are. Listen, I've got, you know, really good relationship with, you know, Scotty Pacino and Michael Stavall, and, you know, those guys are great. And we will continue to talk to them about their players. But we're not going to talk about, you know, where we are in the, you know, with a potential extension. You know, as far as the future, I mean, listen, I think, you know, obviously with Ian, you know, we definitely have him for next year. You know, with Wilson, obviously he's a free agent, and that process has to play out. But I mean, to me, the biggest and most important thing is, you know, my goal is to build something that's really special. And I think that, you know, to build something that I believe can go deep in October and they can win championships. And I don't want to think that, you know, building something that you hope can maybe be respectable, or hope can maybe sneak into a wild card position, you know, that's not what snaps me out of bed in the morning. You know, I feel like when I look at, you know, my career and the memories I have, all of the truly great memories are from teams that either won a championship or had a chance to win a championship. And that's what I want to build here. And so we're going to work really hard to do that. And, you know, sometimes we're going to make moves to try to make sure that we line that up, you know, for the future. So that's the goal. Nothing's changed in that regard. I think, you know, we had a great run here for 6 years where we had a bunch of teams that had a chance to win a championship. One of them did. We had several other teams that had a chance to do that. And that's what we're trying to build. I'm not trying to build something that I think can sort of like just sneak in. That's not the goal.
Okay, well, let's get on with it then. Like, that's no, it's great. We talk about what we're doing and what we're doing and what we're doing. How many years are we now into this is what we're doing?
Two. One and a half?
Okay. I mean, depending on how you count the pandemic thing, well, it's just interesting to me. How are you?
I'm not counting the pandemic thing because they thought that they, because it was a 60-game season, and their guys were still here, they thought that they still had a chance. So this is year two.
How does one comp pick, if you give Wilson Contreras a qualifying offer, taking Ian Happ out of it for right now, if you give him the QO and he doesn't take it and he goes to free agency and you take that pick, how is that pick more valuable to you? How are you closer to competing to win a World Series and winning that World Series with that pick than you are with whatever package of prospects he
lottery
would have
tickets.
Netted.
Whatever package of lottery tickets that you would have gotten for Wilson Contreras.
I'm just wondering. That's what I want explained to me as if I'm an idiot.
Well, and let's say that it's two lower level prospects that you were going to trade to the Rays. Are those prospects, the chance of those prospects being better than what you're going to get on the compensatory market after the second round of the draft? To me, it's an easier calculus than I think Jed is making it out to be.
And maybe he would answer, absolutely, a comp pick's more valuable than that. But then what does that say about Wilson Contreras' value?
Right. But he values more to them now, and I guess the idea is, well, he's going to help bring along some of the players on your I don't know how to take any of it, Dan. Like I'm stuck going. To me, it just felt like Jed got left holding the bag on this.
Is this texter right from the 847? No team has traded for a catcher at the deadline and won the World Series.
I don't know. I'd have to do a deep dive on that. Ask yourself this question. Is Contreras worthy of a Yasmani Grandal deal?
Not a left-handed hitter.
Well, neither is Grandal right now.
Well, and Grandal was known for his framing skills, but we know going forward,
yeah, we know that
deal that's not going to have as much value.
Bit of a fugazi because yeah, he can he does help gain strikes. He also loses the ball.
Yes, he's not a great receiver overall.
What was it that his the hits that he's had, like almost all of them have been singles?
That's bad.
And he hasn't had a lot of hits.
Here's a
That's
note.
That's called Tim Anderson disease. It's part of the power.
Yeah, Tim Anderson has a 17-game on base and 9-game hit streak, but the ISO is under 100, right?
Yep.
It's not good.
Can I just share a note? This was passed along by my partner, James Fox, at Future Sox, and he talked about the significance of the qualifying offer. The 80th pick in the draft is the Cubs, if Wilson Contreras decides to decline the qualifying offer.
Between 67 and 80th is the
compensatory
pick.
You. 800,000 to 900,000 of bonus pool space added to your draft board or your draft, whatever that is.
The pool,
the pool. Thank you. And they can get a top 45 prospect in that range if they want to allocate resources appropriately. So that's, I think, where the front office is sort of thinking with this. There's value in adding that to the draft pool, I guess.
Okay.
I mean, I know they're not stupid. They're not making this up. I just want it explained to me in those same terms by the organization.
I would also offer that that is after the fact, that they can go, oh, well, yeah, well, obviously, guys, like the compensatory pick, like it's so valuable. It's super valuable. You guys have got to keep that in mind. Where had their strategy been to make a trade for Wilson Contreras earlier, perhaps they would have gotten something that was worth more than the compensatory pick and the amount of money that's going to be added in draft bonus slotting. Perhaps.
Yeah, there's a time when the iron was hot.
And I think I stand by this. Like that doesn't change my feeling about they used a strategy that worked for them last year and it didn't work for them this year. We'll wait until teams get desperate, then we'll up the offer, and then they didn't get the offer that they were thinking they'd get.
We're going to have a busy show tomorrow as we're going to be joined by Josh Nelson of Sox Machine, Mark Grody, Joe Ostrowski, Steve Stone. We've got a lot to do on the Friday edition of Bernstein and Holmes, but thank you to Ryan McGuffey and Patrick Mooney. Thanks to Ray Diaz, Mike Rankin, Brandon Fryer, and Connor O'Donnell for all of their hard work today. We've got a doubleheader, Cubs and the Cardinals, after last night's rainout, coming your way on Sports Radio 670, The Score.